Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Sean Casten is in Congress, and we want to ask him, and frankly, the entire Illinois congressional delegation, about the New Green Deal, amongst other things.
He's part of the rookie class there that is getting a lot of attention, representing the 6th District of Illinois, Representative Casten. Thanks for joining us this morning.
And by the way, Sean, I would recommend that you change the name to Alexandra Ocasio-Casten, and you're going to get some serious, you're going to get some heat behind you.
I'll do that just to boost my Twitter profile.
That's what I'm talking about.
Mr. Casten, you ran on a platform of climate change. I really want to get your thoughts on what was proposed by Democrats in Congress with the new Green Deal.
Well, look, my top three priorities in Congress are climate change. That's been true for the last 20 years of my life. It doesn't change now. I don't actually think that the Green New Deal is a good way to get that done. I think it is fantastic that it is forcing us all to have this conversation. You know, let's be honest, this would not be a priority right now, but for the work that the Green New Deal advocates have done, so I'm glad they've done that. But it is, as a document, it is not a policy document. It is a set of social aspirations. And
how much of it survives? Like, you know, because you know, McConnell wants to take a test vote because he wants to show it doesn't work or wrap himself around things that do. It's all politics. So how much of this survives and thrives? Because there's pieces of this that are really important.
Well, I would again say how much of survives, it kind of doesn't matter unless it's a policy document. If we were talking about a document that had, you know, like H.R. 1 that we're passing, that has a whole series of electoral reforms, and if one of those provisions passes through the Senate, we've passed something. The Green New Deal doesn't really have any policy prescriptions in it. It has aspirations. I would hope that a lot of those aspirations survive, but even if the Senate voted in favor of that entire document, it doesn't give us anything that is actionable that would direct behavior. And what I think is really critical, we don't have, you know, we've got a decade to do something about climate. We cannot afford to wait 2 years until we have Democratic control of the Senate and the White House to act. And working on aspirations chews up limited amounts of time. So I don't really think it's a question of how much survives the Senate. It's a question of when do we get to the point of crafting the policies that are going to lower CO2 emissions and do so in a way that's going to grow the economy. And there's lots of good ways we can do that. And the Green New Deal has forced us to start thinking about that. And I'm looking forward to being a part of that.
That's a great point, though, right? This idea that when you talk about aspirations, you do have to get everybody on the same page. The Green New Deal is almost like you think about a 2019 version of the Bill of Rights. This concept of this is what Americans should expect from being citizens in this country. Are you surprised, I guess surprised might be the right word, of the criticism and the pushback on just the aspirational parts of this document?
Yes and no. I'm not surprised in the sense that, you know, look, it's become a litmus test in the Republican Party that you have to deny climate change. So in that case, I'm not surprised. What I'm a little bit surprised about is that there's a growing consensus that we have to act on climate change. The Green New Deal has stapled addressing climate change with addressing a whole host of other issues, from, you know, how do we close gaps in wealth inequality, how do we create middle-skilled jobs, lots of things that, you know, I think we would all like to live in a world where those problems were solved, but they don't necessarily all fit together in a coherent whole, except in a very aspirational sense.
Well, I may be misreading you, but I sense a little bit of frustration from you, and you can certainly tell me if I'm wrong, that we don't have time to waste on something that is purely aspirational and not actionable. Am I overreading that?
A little bit. I think you have to force the conversation.
And this
and
does
the
that?
The Green New Deal has forced the conversation, and in that sense, it's been very effective. Now, once you've forced the conversation, what are we going to talk about? And that's the piece that we now have to transition to. And so if if you sense any frustration, it's only that I think I want to get us to the point where now we have to talk about it. But we're moving pretty quick on that front, and that's encouraging.
Is the approach too much too fast? In other words, do you need to bring people along who are skeptical by telling them, oh, let's at least take this step and that step? Point being, when I was a kid, there was littering going on, and I hated it. But it took a man portraying an Indian on TV tearing up before we paid attention to it. And my kids were the first generation to recycle. We can affect this, even if you don't believe we can fix this. So, is there too much being asked for?
Well, I don't think there's too much being asked for, because we don't have time to wait. I think the framing we have, look, here's the fundamental question in my view. We have no evidence in human history of decoupling economic growth from increases in CO2 emissions. That scares a lot of people, and it has pitted people who support economic growth against those who support CO2 reduction. It is absolutely dead wrong. And unfortunately, if you haven't spent as much time in the energy sector as I have, you might conclude that that's a reasonable argument. And so, and you've heard that argument from, I think it's one place where the far left and the far right both agree, right? You can't lower CO2 emissions without economic pain. Mm-hmm. It's not true. The reason it's not true is because anything you do to reduce CO2 emissions meaningfully is going to lead to less fossil fuel combustion, which is going to mean that people don't spend as much money on fossil fuel. If you put solar panels up, if you put a wind turbine up, if you put more efficient light bulbs in your home, all of those things save you money and leave more money in your pocket at the end of the day. We don't have to convince people that climate change is real. All we have to do is convince people to be greedy. And I think we can do that. I've done it in my business. We need to do it here. But we need to do that in the context of recognizing first, why is it that our current energy policies don't always reward people for being greedy?
Representative, one thing in the Green New Deal that seemed to grab a lot of people's attention was this concept that this needs to happen fast. A lot of these things, aspirationally, we're talking about what can happen in a decade. Do you think that we are a country that can say, hey, we're not going to have fossil fuels anymore, so here's the deadline? And, from here on out, we need to be off of this kind of energy and onto this energy, almost like what we did with, we were talking about digital TV, this concept of this is the deadline, and this is when you have to get that adapter, and this is when you have to change. Do you think that we're the kind of country that can do that?
Well, we have in the past, right? I mean, look at about the 30-year period, between the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century. We built railroads. We electrified the country. We invented and deployed, cars and telephones. We've done it in the past. More recently, when we started the process of deregulating the electricity system in the early 90s, in about a decade, we built over 200,000 megawatts of generation, which is about 20% of the entire U.S. electric grid. So we've done it. We can do that. Now the question, and I think we need to reframe this, the goal is not to eliminate fossil fuel by year X. The goal is to get the CO2 down as quickly as possible. Those are not necessarily the same thing. You've got places in a lot of the Midwest where, as we build more wind, utilities are simultaneously building more gas turbine generators to balance intermittent load. And so we're actually seeing an increase in deployment of gas-fired generation in the Midwest because we're installing more wind. When that's happening, if your goal is to get CO2 down, maybe what you need is not more renewable generation, but some more efficient gas-fired generation that's going to shore in the peaks and get the CO2 down as quickly as possible. We can do that. There's smart people know how to do that. There's good, competent people in various, elected office and regulatory agencies. But you need to do that leading with expertise, not leading with aspirations.
Well, and I would also give you a bit of free advice from the public, because I certainly hear this and get this all the time, and that is, don't tell me what I need to do to save the world. Show me why what you're doing is going to save the world. And there's a little too much scolding that goes on at times, as opposed to demonstrating the actionable advantage of doing this, no matter how annoying it might be for people to do that.
Well, Well, that's precisely why I said that the goal is to make people greedy. When, you know, in the businesses I ran, we didn't tell people to save CO2 by scolding them. We said, I'm going to write you a check for your utilities. I'm going to save you a bunch of money on energy, and then I'd like to keep all that money for myself. And then our customers would say, wait a minute, I want some of that. And I'd say, okay, now we're having a negotiation. But in all cases, we're going to lower the CO2, but we're going to do it by appealing to your self-interest, not by telling you that you're amoral if you don't agree with mine.
You appreciate that I didn't bring up Trump this whole call?
You know, the best way to deal with narcissists is ignore them. It makes them go crazy.
It is Congressman Sean Casten, and you can certainly reach him at his office. You could Google Sean Kasten's office, or he could tell you the website right now.
Do I even know the website?
Well, it's, look at you.
Kastenhouse.gov.
Yeah, I think that's it, actually.
Yeah.
Don't
website.
One of these things.
You know, commit it to memory. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.